This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is up, everyone? We are back with another episode of Real Talk University. This is a podcast where we interview world-class guests who are entrepreneurs, philanthropists, anyone who has had success in their own right and who has a story to tell. And today we had Guy Kawasaki on. He's the Chief Evangelist Officer of Canva, which is an app that we use religiously for our designs on social media, among other things. And he also has experience working with companies such as Apple, where he was actually right under Steve Jobs for two different tours with the company and is now going down in history as an Apple Fellow, which is a true honor. So we had a great privilege to interview him. He's super influential in Silicon Valley. And we learned a lot from him. And he also just released a new book called Wise Guy, which you can get for free using the link for our Audible sponsorship that you'll be hearing pretty soon. So check the link in the show notes, and I'll let Christian give his two cents on this as well.
Yeah, for sure. We really appreciated having Guy on. I mean, someone as influential as him working for companies like Apple and Mercedes definitely has a busy schedule. We appreciated the time we had with him, and make sure to go check out his book. I'm sure he was as influential in that as he was in the interview. And as always, guys, make sure to check us out on social media. Subscribe to YouTube. We're still looking to get to 100 subscribers. We're going to have a little giveaway once we get there. And keep following along and supporting us. So thanks, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Audible. For you, the listeners of our podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook of your choice by signing up for a free 30-day trial. Try Audible for free and claim your free audiobook at audibletrial.com/realtalk. Again, that's audibletrial.com/realtalk.
All right, sweet. So we're just going to get right into it. Don't want to waste any time. For those listeners out there who aren't familiar with you, could you just give us a brief background about yourself?
Sure. My name is Guy Kawasaki. I'm Chief Evangelist of Canva, online graphics design service, Mercedes-Benz brand ambassador, and author.
Awesome. We actually use Canva for some of our graphics on our social media pages.
All of our graphics.
That's great. Awesome. Thank you.
What's it like being a brand ambassador for Mercedes? That must be like a tall task. I mean, it's such a well-known company.
It's a, you know, thankless job. You get paid to drive a Mercedes. Somebody's got to do it. So it's, yeah. The other ones are people like Roger Federer, Garrett McNamara, big wave surfer, Susan Wolf, the first female F1 driver. You know, world-class athletes, and then there's me. So I don't know. Somehow I
world-class evangelist.
Yeah. Right,
that's awesome.
Everybody has a strength.
Exactly. And obviously yours is entrepreneurship. So when did you first realize that you were kind of an entrepreneur?
Oh, man, that, you know, this is one of those kind of retroactive, faulty memory kind of things. I first left Apple in 1987 to start a company. So that's the first time I really squeezed the trigger.
Wow.
It was a software company.
And so, what company was that?
ACI US. It was a Macintosh relational database company.
So was that hard to like leave Apple and kind of take that leap of faith? Because at the time back then, like being an entrepreneur wasn't too popular.
Well, you know, looking back, it was a dumb move. I mean, if I had stayed at Apple that time when I came back and I left again either time, you know, I wouldn't be writing books and I wouldn't be on Zoom recordings right now. I'd be, you know, Tahiti or something.
Right.
It wasn't that hard because I really wanted to do it for one thing. And my manager at Apple, he didn't give me a promotion that I thought he should have. So, you know, that didn't sit well. I mean, yeah. But like I said, if I had stayed there, if I had shut up and stayed there,
probably wouldn't have been here today. Wow. So
that's true. That,
you took the leap of faith.
That's right.
Right. So while I was kind of researching you on your background and stuff, from my understanding, you set out to be a lawyer at first, but you quit. So why exactly did you quit?
I hated law school. I couldn't stand it. I just couldn't take it. I was there about 2 weeks.
Yeah. What about it? Just like the professors, the class?
I didn't even get to a class. It was just the orientation and how they were trying to scare you and, you know, like intimidate you. And I just, my ego was too fragile back then. So today I can handle it.
Right. How did your parents receive that move? Were they accepting of it?
Much better than I thought. I thought I was going to get disowned, but my father said, you know, as long as you make something of your life by the time you're 25, it's okay. So.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Really cool. So, I mean, obviously with your experience of college and how kind of how a degree is impacting now, how do you think the importance of going to college and getting a degree has changed over time?
There are some people who believe that if you really have this great idea, et cetera, you should just, you don't need a college education, just go out and do it. And obviously Stephen Woz did that, but you know, I can't think of any other example besides Stephen Woz.
Not everyone is Stephen Woz, right?
No kidding, right. So I think that it cannot hurt to have a 4-year or, you know, 3-year, whatever time it takes you, college background. It just grounds you. It provides a better framework, greater awareness of the world, greater maturity. So yeah, I realize that people drop out of college and they do it and, you know, they're successful, but now they're few and far between. I mean, you know, it's like when you read about a kid who drops out of college and goes in the NBA draft and, you know, makes the Lakers and all that kind of stuff, right? So yeah, I mean, he did it, right? But LeBron, not everybody's LeBron James. I mean,
Right. It's a small case study, basically. It's not for everyone. So, what do you think the most important aspect of college is? So maybe for those people that are thinking maybe they don't have to go, why should they go?
Well, if I were to be honest, and why should I be dishonest? The most valuable thing that came out of my undergraduate degree was a couple friendships, because one of them hired me at Apple. So. Believe it or not,
exactly.
Had I not met that guy who gave me a job at Apple, who knows where I'd be. I will say that I have two recent college grads in my family, my two sons. And I can tell you one thing, because I've asked them, no one has ever asked them what their GPA was.
Really?
So If your listeners are all like worried about GPA, now obviously if you need to get into medical school or you need to get into law school or something like that, yes, you have to care about your GPA. But if you're going to graduate from college and then go into the workforce, listen, the lack of a great GPA is not going to matter, and the presence of a great GPA will not matter either if you can't actually do work.
Yeah, that's so true. I think it's just real world skills, being able to connect with people and you know, obviously adapt to different environments is huge. So for those of you listening out there that aren't, you know, excelling at college too much, obviously
don't stress.
Because this guy's got more than enough experience to tell the difference.
It doesn't matter how you get a job. It matters what you do once you get it. And so in my case, it was pure nepotism that got me in my job at Apple. But, you know, on day two, it didn't matter whose buddy I was. I either delivered or I didn't deliver. The flip side is also true. Let's say that you have the perfect computer science background, you know, 4.2 GPA, cum laude, all that good stuff. And you go in there and you're a total dork. Your background, your GPA doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, you got to have people skills. So obviously, you know, you have a big background with Apple, and Apple personally is my favorite company. A lot of people's favorite company is probably the most successful company out there. So first, like, what was it like when you first started working there? Was like, what was the atmosphere there? Was everyone like really excited, really nervous, or like kind of describe the atmosphere if you could?
Well, I went to work for the Macintosh division of Apple. This is in 83, and it was like, you know, Disneyland. I mean, we were going to change the world. We're going to dent the universe. We're going to do in IBM. We're going to preserve freedom and democracy and thought and, you know, all that good stuff. It was really kind of a exhilarating religious experience, you know, led by none other than Steve Jobs. So I hope everybody has a chance once in their life to work for something like a Macintosh division.
Yeah, that's amazing. What would you compare it to, like, modern day? Is there really anything at that level or – not that
maybe the closest thing is let me start all over. Probably the closest thing to the Macintosh division is Tesla.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. I mean, you know, Elon Musk is a wild man. I don't know personally, but from the outside looking in, he sure looks like a wild man.
Yeah.
So Steve Jobs was a wild man. Two visionaries, two people trying to change the world, not just do better sameness. So I would bet that Tesla is a little bit like Apple or a lot like Apple.
That's cool. So obviously Steve Jobs was your boss. So like, was he like a hard ass or like, how was he working for him? Was he always there?
Everything you read and heard about him is true. Very intimidating, perfectionist, didn't tolerate BS. The metaphor I would ask your listeners and viewers to consider is, and it may be too early for you guys to wrap your mind around this, but you know, 20 years from now, you're going to look back and you're going to say, well, the person I learned the most from was the toughest professor, the toughest teacher, the toughest boss, the toughest coach. It's not the ones that let you get away with murder. It's the ones that rip you up and down. And those are the ones you're going to come to appreciate. And Steve Jobs was one of those kind of people.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that.
Was he different, like, outside of the office, or was he, you know, in all areas of life, super focused, super tough?
I wasn't in his total inner sanctum. And so, you know, when I went home every day without getting fired, I considered that a victory. I wasn't looking for more exposure to possibly get fired. So,
that's awesome.
Right. So what were kind of some of his daily routines in the workplace? Like, did he have a set routine? Was he always going through the same motions, or was he kind of like...
I don't even know. I mean, yeah. You know, he wore black mock turtlenecks and Birkenstocks and Levi's jeans, or not Birkenstocks. He wore New Balance running shoes, although I'd never seen Birkenstocks in my life. So, but you know what? I mean, I wouldn't, you know, with someone like Steve, who's about 16 standard deviations beyond the norm, I would not necessarily look at him and say, okay, I'm going to pattern myself after Steve Jobs, right? So I'm going to wear Levi's and New Balance and black mock turtlenecks, and I'm going to buy a Mercedes, and I'm never going to get a license. I'm going to park in the handicap spot, and I'm going to go in the carpool lane with one passenger because that's going to make me the next Steve Jobs. No, it won't. It'll just make you into a, you know, 24 karat, you know what? So I don't want your listeners and viewers to all think, oh, I'm going to be the next Steve Jobs. Don't be the next Steve Jobs. Be the next great leader, great entrepreneur.
Exactly. So after you left Apple, what were kind of some main takeaways you took away from working there?
Well, I learned from Steve specifically that your current customers really can't tell you how to innovate and revolutionize a business. I mean, the current customers at Apple wanted a better, faster, cheaper Apple II. Nobody said build a Macintosh. I also learned that design counts. It may not count for everybody, but enough people care about design. And I learned that when people truly love what you do, they become your evangelists. Yeah, you don't have to pay them. I mean, they just love what you do, and they view it as a way to make the world a better place, and they want to get on the bandwagon.
Yeah. So actually, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Simon Sinek, his book,
yeah.
Start With Why. Yeah, he talks about that a lot, about how, you know, like, people bought into why or what Apple was doing, not like their products, like the dimensions of the products, the specs, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, replicating that with the startups that you've worked on, like, how hard has that been able to do? And what do you think is the best steps to take in doing
that's it? That's a very insightful question. So I would say in my career, which started in 83 and is, you know, today, 2019, I've come across two companies that have that kind of potential to change the world, debt the universe, whatever, right? And yeah. So the first one was Macintosh and Apple, and the second one is Canva. The Canva truly can empower people to create great designs, and it can empower anyone. And so
it's amazing, yeah. Because Christian and I here have had no prior design experience.
Yeah.
We make social media posts, YouTube content, everything within seconds. Like, without any effort, it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, think of in the old world, you're meeting with design firms and they would be submitting you stuff, and then you pick one and you go back and forth, and you know, $10,000 later, you have an Instagram post.
yeah.
Or you can ask their Photoshop, which good luck with that.
Photoshop's intense. There's like 4 million different ways to use it, and it's pointless. Design should be simple, elegant, and modern. Like there's no better way to have that. So I definitely agree.
Amen, brother. I believe.
Right. So kind of back to when you left Apple, like why did you decide to leave? Did you think, oh, I can go out there and kind of make my own legacy, or did you just want to, like I said, go and start your own company?
The first time I left, I wanted to start a company. And the second time I left, I also wanted to start a company. So both times I left because I wanted to start a company. So that, you know, that cost me probably $200 million, I mean, give or take, you know.
Gotcha. So
it's all about happiness, though, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Really,
yeah. Well, you know, I got to tell you, with $200 million, you could be happy too. Don't get me wrong.
True. That's true. Very true.
Like, why do you think you wanted to start a company? Was it just being around like that energy of Steve Jobs, made him work on like his passion every day, or?
Well, I came from the jewelry business, and where you actually close a sale, right? You get out a sales order and you write it up, and you can really see what you're doing, and you make stuff and it goes out in boxes and checks come back in, right? And that's very satisfying. So selling software, it can be very satisfying. Getting people to use Canva, and then if they buy photos or if they join the enterprise version, is very satisfying. For example, I could never be a banker, right? Because I don't want to like do derivatives, and I don't want to borrow money at 0% and loan it out at 1% and think I'm helping the world. That's just not in my psyche.
Yeah, and I think with Canva, something really important about it is that it's free, and obviously the tools and resources it has are so advanced. So like when you set out to, you know, work on Canva, was that something that you for sure had to have, like something that was free and accessible to, you know, everyday people?
Listen, I can look back and say, yeah, I knew all that. It was totally a wise decision. But the truth is that someone who worked for me or still works with me, let me start all over. The truth is that someone who works for me was using Canva for my tweets. And out of the blue one day, Canva tweets me. And I went to that person and I said, is this the company that you use to build my graphics? And she said, yeah. And I said, do you like them? She said, yeah. And I said, should I help them? And she said, yeah. And I said, okay, I will. And 2 weeks later, they were at my house. And then 2 weeks after that, I was on board as chief evangelist. So right, I wasn't looking for a job. I didn't apply. This was just, you know, to use an ancient oriental, well, that's a bad word, to use an ancient Chinese saying, I was standing by the side of the river and a Peking duck flew in my mouth.
that's great. I think that's like a great, you know, description of life sometimes, you know. You don't really, sometimes you just don't expect things to happen, and then an opportunity comes by, it's too good to pass up on, and
yeah, you know,
definitely change the course of your life. So
it's better to be lucky than smart, man.
Right. For anyone in the audience that doesn't know what a chief evangelist is, could you just kind of give like an overview of what exactly you do?
So evangelism comes from Greek word meaning bring the good news. So an evangelist brings the good news. I brought the good news of Macintosh. It makes you more creative and productive. I'm bringing the good news of Canva. Enables anybody to create great graphics. So the chief evangelist is just typically a person inside that company who's in charge of evangelists, or the most outward focused person.
Right. So how do you go about spreading the message to the companies?
Well, I think the most powerful method in tech anyway is a demo. You know, you demo Canva, you demo. Start all over. I think the most effective way is you demo. You demo Canva, you demo Macintosh, you show what it can do. And that's very different than bludgeoning people on the head and trying to force them to become your customer.
Yeah, nowadays, like, visuals and on-hand experience is so important for customers. They just need to have that, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, you have to, like, be a strong believer in what you're marketing to other people. So do you only, obviously, hop on to companies that you really believe the message behind, or do you kind of just hop on the best opportunity?
Well, to the extent that I'm this deep, you know, with a Canva or an Apple, yeah. But do I, from time to time, endorse products? Yes. Do I like those products? Yes. I mean, it's not like I'm getting $50,000 for an Instagram tweet about, you know, Burger King French fries. Although I suppose if they contacted me, I'd be tempted, but you know.
Yeah.
No, right now it's I'm Canva. Canva and Mercedes-Benz.
That's awesome.
Seems awesome to me, yeah. So why was the Mac such a good fit for evangelism marketing for you when you first did that?
Because it was so different from the Apple II and MS-DOS machines. You know, you're too young to know, but back then there was no such thing as a mouse and graphical user interface and WYSIWYG and all that kind of stuff. It was, you know, 24 by 80 terminal, basically, where you could type 10 numbers and 26 lowercase letters and 26 uppercase letters and, you know, the question mark and that kind of stuff. It's a very different world. And when I first saw Macintosh with Mac Paint and Mac Write, WYSIWYG, you know, drag the mouse, create stuff, man, it was, the skies just started turning blue and the rain went away and angels started singing.
That's amazing.
Right. So how insane is it to like see how far computers and technology have come since those days?
Well, you know, this is 1983 and it's now 2019. And much of the Macintosh has, you know, sort of remained the same, right? Obviously, faster chips and all that. But the same WYSIWYG paradigm, I can't say that I'm a big believer in AR or VR. So it hasn't changed that much. With iOS is obviously different from Mac OS, but it's still, you know, icons and WYSIWYG and you press and you drag and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think we've seen the huge leap yet. I hope that we do.
So if you had to guess, what would be what would the next leap look like?
There's nobody who can tell you that. Maybe Elon Musk. I can't.
If they could, they'd probably be rich, right?
Well, or if they could, they would, you know, not tell you. I don't think anybody can predict beyond a year. You know, I mean, people can predict, yes, computers will get cheaper, faster, better battery, you know, whatever. Phones will be bendable, et cetera, those kind of things. But to really call it, to say this is the next category as opposed to the next version of the same thing, I don't know anybody who can do that. Now, what you do is lots of people make lots of predictions, and then after the fact, you say, yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
Then why didn't you do anything about it?
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm just curious, when you were, obviously you had to sell and market the Macintosh, and at that point, like, computers weren't very popular. So was it like hard to market an unfamiliar piece of technology, or did you kind of just sell it based on emotion and like excitement about something?
Well, you know, back then it was the Apple II and MS-DOS, and I would say it was limited to hobbyists and educators and enthusiasts. So the great democratization of computers had not yet occurred for a big reason called user interface and accessibility and all that. So this is kind of like when you had the first car where you had to go outside and, you know, spin the thing in the front to crank it up and all that. So, you know, not a lot of people bought cars, but as cars got better and better, now we all have one or two, right?
Exactly.
So it was back where you were outside the car spinning the crank in the front to turn it on. But even at that point, you could kind of see that, wow, a car is a lot better than a horse.
Yeah.
So,
exactly. That brings up a great point, is that even Apple, like companies like Apple, started with small markets. Like Tesla did the same.
Oh, yeah.
So for people that are looking to start, you know, a company or a startup in Silicon Valley, like, you want to kind of just touch on the importance of picking a niche market and then expanding into a broader market once it's widely accepted?
The important lesson is that, you know, you look at a Microsoft or an Apple and you think, oh my God, you know, they had this grand plan. They were going to dominate hardware, software, cloud, gaming, you know, Apple retail stores. But that's not true. At the start, they just wanted to make computers for hobbyists, called an Apple One.
Yeah.
And Apple One was successful, Apple Two successful, Apple Three wasn't, Macintosh was, Newton wasn't, you know. And then when all the dust settles, 25, 30 years later, and now you have software, hardware, gaming, e-commerce, cloud, retail. When you have all that, then you can say, yeah, I planned it all.
Yeah,
but exactly. Really, you are two guys in a garage, two gals in a garage, a guy and a gal in a garage. You're just trying to get your first sale. And lo and behold, you weren't the only two nutcases in the world that wanted this.
Yeah, it's so true. It's such a
and
big
then, one. And then 30 years go by, and now you have worldwide domination. And that's just the way the world works. So one lesson to your viewers is that don't try to boil the ocean. Just boil a pot.
I love that.
If you boil enough pots, maybe someday you'll get to the ocean level, but out the gate, you're not going to boil the ocean.
That's
right,
amazing.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, that's so true. I just wanted to bring up that point because it's such a big lesson for people, you know, going out and trying to start a startup. So obviously you later rejoined Apple. So I was just wondering if the environment and the atmosphere was different from when you first worked there.
Well, when I went back, it was a completely different world because at that point, Apple was quote unquote supposed to die. So I went back to help preserve Apple. So it was a very different Apple. Steve had, you know, just been thrown out, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
So was it how different
Apple
was
that it's
without Steve?
I'm sorry?
Like was there a big difference without Steve, like in leadership and how things were done?
That's a really hard question, you know, because he was thrown out because of what he allegedly failed to do.
Yeah.
And then he was brought back because come to find out nobody else could do it anyway. So,
yeah,
you know, it's, but he is the greatest. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I hope every one of you have a chance to work for someone like Steve once in your life.
Right. That's just crazy to think that someone as dominant as Apple today was like on the verge of failure back then, kind of like Nike.
Well, I mean, you know, listen, if we're so freaking smart, you know, why did I quit twice, right? I not only quit twice, I turned Steve down for another job. If I had not done any of those three things, it would be a very different, you know, world for me personally. And I write about this in my book that, you know, people make mistakes. I mean, you know, those are three humongous mistakes. But at the time, you know, what did I know? I mean, if you told me in 1987 that someday Apple would be the most valuable company in the world, I would tell you that you are on drugs.
Wow. That's actually crazy.
Yeah.
It's cool to hear from someone, obviously, that was in right at the start and had firsthand experience working with, you know, Steve and Woz.
Yeah, so for the people who, you know, who are watching you, I suppose that they're very worried about making the first right career move, right? They got to find that right job. And I'll tell you something. I think you don't need to think too much because over the course of your careers, you're probably going to have 15 jobs. You won't even remember what your first job was.
Right.
So, you know, like, praise God, you know, you graduate from college and you go to the next Google. And 5 years after you graduate from college, you're worth $100 million. Holy cow. You know, knock on wood. I hope that happens. That's not very likely. So, you know, you go out, you take a job. Startup can't raise money. You get laid off. You know, you go to work for a large consumer goods company. You learn how to sell. And two or three jobs down the road, you learn that, wow, selling is a very valuable thing. Now I can work at this startup and make it into the next Google or something like that.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't matter what your first job is, but I am saying that the concept that you're going to pick the right first job and it's going to be the perfect thing and, you know, live on happily ever after.
No such thing.
No such animal.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it's just the nature of adding certain experiences and using them all as a force towards something in the end that you could, you know, fully put as much as you can into.
Well, you know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's actually a marathon / decathlon. It's not a sprint.
Right.
Definitely.
So since you started a bunch of startups, other than selling, what would you say is the most important aspect of like becoming a successful startup?
There's only two things. You got to sell it and make it. So
yeah,
that's it. That's all you need to know.
Simple enough.
You're good at selling and making, everything else flows. Yep.
So what do you feel like is the most important project or startup that you've worked on, and why would you choose that?
Oh, for sure, Macintosh and Canva. In terms of changing the world potential, Macintosh and Canva, absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what would you say probably the biggest trend for the next few years in Silicon Valley is? Obviously, you already canceled out AR and VR.
I have no idea. I could not tell you. Nobody can tell you. I just know I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, at least you're honest. A lot of people think, you know, they know. And that's, you know, obviously not great. But so now we're going to go into your book and just your writing career. This is, you know, you've written over a dozen books. Your latest book, Wise Guy, is it out yet? It's out?
It's going to be out on February 26th.
26th. Right. Perfect. Cool. So obviously we'll drop the link in the bio. We'll let everyone know about it. So how have you always been an avid writer? Because writing that many books, like, is that what the average person does, you know?
Always is a long time. So I started in 1987. So that's, you know, whatever that is. What is 13 plus
19?
32. So the last 30 years or so. And listen, I wrote my first book, was called The Macintosh Way. I thought that was the only book I would ever write. I mean,
yeah.
I had no clue I would be writing 15 books.
Yeah, like, how do you have motivation to write another book? Is it just something, an idea that comes to you? You're like, I got to write about this? Or
it's called an advance.
In advance.
So when I was looking at your bio.
You're not getting that. That's a joke. In other words, royalty.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, it's kind of like remember the analogy one of our friends used? Like, if someone makes a really good album 30 years later, they'll still be collecting on it. So
yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So I was reading your bio, and you said that you credit, like, your writing passion to your AP English teacher, and, like...
Yep. He was a real drill sergeant and made you just rewrite everything, and, yeah, I owe it to him. And I, you know, I'm not an engineer, so I can't, quote, make anything, but when I'm in Microsoft Word, that's my compiler, right? I am making something, so that's very satisfying that I'm not just, you know... schlepping or evangelizing or selling somebody else's thing. Yeah. This is my own thing. I made it and I'm selling it.
Definitely. So obviously after writing so many books, you probably have a process nailed down. If you want to provide some insight into that for people that might be wanting to write a book, what's the best way to do it? Probably just stay consistent, right?
this is in the category of do what I say, not what I do. But, it's very hard to write a book because it's lonely, and you know, most people aren't going to get the mega advance. Even if you, by definition, if you get a mega advance, you're probably so famous and so rich and so powerful and so busy, you don't have time to write a book. So you just have to do a little bit every day, and then a year later you wake up and it's done. But to wait for this perfect world when everything is, you know, tranquil and everything is clean and neat. Mm-hmm. You know, now you can write, that day never comes. So you just have to write every day.
That's exactly what I'm
like dieting.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's awesome.
That's exactly what he's doing right now. I don't know if he's going to say it, but he, every morning he's writing a few pages for his book that he's hoping to release in the summer.
That's great. That's great. That's what it takes.
Yeah. So we're big fans of, obviously, Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, and I was reading that you were, like, mistaken for Rich Dad Poor Dad. So I was just
all the time.
How that went down.
Yeah, all the time. People come up to me and they say, yeah, your book really changed my life. And I say, well, which one of my
books? Which one?
Right. And they say, Rich Dad Poor Dad.
The only one that's not yours.
Yeah, exactly. Very funny. And I know him too, so.
Yeah, he seems like a great guy. I mean, obviously, his book is incredible. So. Kind of a deep question here. What does success mean to you? Like, how would you describe the word successful?
For me, success means I can surf anytime I want. That's how I define success.
Freedom.
Yeah. I just love to surf. Yeah. But I'm at the end of my career. So.
How is your surfing going? How is surfing? I would love to surf one day. I mean.
Well, where are you guys located?
Upstate New York.
It's tropical and sunny.
Yeah, that ain't happening there. Surfing is, do you guys play hockey?
No, we actually had a heat wave today. It was like 55.
Below or above?
Above. No, we don't, I don't play hockey, but.
No, I just love, I loved hockey and then now I love surfing. So it's,
right.
It's just amazing. A great challenge. I love the physicality of it.
That's really cool. Yeah, so again, we were just doing some research on you. Some cool things that popped up is obviously your relationship with Sir Richard Branson. Indirectly maybe. So how did he teach you to be humble?
Well, because we were at a speech together and he asked me if I flew on Virgin. I told him I didn't because I'm a United Global Services customer. And then he got on his knees and started polishing my shoes with his jacket. So I figured if this billionaire who owns his own island and is a knight can do that, anybody can do that.
Wow.
But that was a red letter day in my life, the day Richard Branson asked me to fly on Virgin.
That's awesome. That's amazing. He seems like a great guy.
He does, or he is, actually.
But we also heard he sucks at business.
Yeah, right. I'd like to suck like him.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said.
So while we try to build our podcast up, I mean, you obviously know how to sell. So how would you recommend that we kind of create an audience of loyal followers who are willing to kind of contribute to
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's you've got to own a niche. And I don't know if your niche is college grads who want to start companies or, you know, whatever it is, but you got to own a niche. Either that or, you know, you become a Casey Neistat or Logan Paul. And I can't say I know how to do those things, but.
They just kind of took over on trends, you know? I mean, Logan Paul started out on, I don't know if you're familiar with Vine, but he was one of the first people on there. And then when it took off, he took off with it. And then Casey was like one of the first daily vloggers out there, and they've just taken off from there. So hoping to hop on a trend, but
we really appreciate it, man.
All right, take care. I hope you don't freeze.
Stay warm. Stay warm in Hawaii. Right,
see you later. Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course, man. Thank you.
Oh, when you do this, please put a link to the book on Amazon.
Of course. We have a agreement with Audible or an ad with Audible, so our listeners could get direct access to your book. So
okay, thank you.
Yeah, of course, man.
Thanks, all right,
bye.
Hey guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.